Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, using precision agriculture tools was the topic of a producer panel at the Canola Discovery Forum in Saskatoon yesterday. We'll hear from two producers who are in that forefront when it comes to new agricultural precision tools. Canada's food price report predicts the average family of four will be spending an additional $1,065 on food next year, which works out to a 5 to 7% increase. We'll hear from an associate professor at the University of Saskatchewan, Stuart Smythe, on what is causing those severe increases in inflation. Dr. John Campbell, a veterinarian and professor at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Saskatchewan, has started a new podcast. This week, his focus is on the importance of calfhood vaccinations. We'll have a story on that. And it's expected that more farmers will be implementing the 4-Hour Nutrient Stewardship Program. Quinton Cubbin is the Crops Extension Specialist with the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture in North Battleford. All of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bile meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Phil, we have some thin cloud today, but our temperatures much warmer than they were yesterday at this time.
Yeah, we've broken out of that deep freeze, and I think we're good for a while. Looks like right through this weekend, through a good portion of next week, we're going to at least, we may not be warm, we'll call it warm by December standards. We're going to be pretty close to average, and that's when you can get to that point after being in the minus 30s, which is a good 10, 20 degrees below normal, it's nice to be average. Today, we've got sunshine trying to break through. There's still a cold front that's dropping through. Don't panic with the cold air mass coming in. It's not the cold front. In fact, it's sort of stopping. It's nearly stationary now. It may drop through a little bit. The cold air is stacked up a little farther north of it. So even as it drops down a little bit farther south, we're not going to see a big impact to the temperature. In fact, any movement it does drop through us will be negated later on as it starts to lift back northeastward as a warm front. But with that front around, there is some cloud cover. Calling it a mix of clouds and sunshine, maybe we'll say trying to be sunny, breaks of sunshine, thin spots in the overcast. Whatever wording you want to use, there is some sun trying to get through the cloud cover. It's not a thick overcast, so no precipitation coming from these clouds. And not a whole lot of wind either, so wind chill, not a huge factor, especially when we're in the minus teens. You know, there is a bit of a wind chill, but those little winds don't have that tremendous impact as they do when the air is much colder. Temperature drops tonight to around minus 16, will likely rise a bit. The wind does pick up a touch. We're up to minus 9, though, through the day tomorrow with a mix of cloud and sunshine. Better chance for seeing a little more sun through the day tomorrow. Back into that filtered sunshine on Saturday, cloudiness will roll back in. There is a lot happening in the atmosphere. However, nothing directly overhead. All of the energy is staying with a system off the west coast. There's another system cutting through the central U.S. and these little disturbances rotating around in this air mass that's trying to build up a ridge but really isn't doing that. That's why we're normal versus above normal. But because of the movement, these little systems keep some cloud cover passing through from time to time. So we'll again say filtered sunshine on Saturday with a high near minus 8. cloudiness rolls in on Sunday. Still, the flurry threat negligible. The air is pretty dry, so the nuisance type flurries we might get should easily dry up as they try to get toward us on Sunday. Maybe Sunday evening, a few of those flurries hold together. Even Monday, we'll get a better chance for some light snow and flurries, minor stuff. It'll be Monday night into Tuesday and Wednesday. As another storm system starts to take shape over the north central U.S., that will wrap some moisture back toward us. Likely by Tuesday night, we could get into some steady, still light, but steadier snow for the rest of the first half of next week.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour. The Paw is at minus 24 degrees. Swan River, minus 18. Dauphin and Shoal Lake Russell, minus 12. Brandon and Roblin, minus 13. Regina is at minus 14. Saskatoon, Broadview, Mooseman, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 11. Hudson Bay, minus 20. Indian Head, minus 12. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, an east wind at 15 kilometers an hour. 76% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 13 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 21 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 16 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 34 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is minus 10. The normal low is minus 19. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:41 this morning, and it will set at 4:43 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was McCreary at minus 12 degrees. The cold spot was Clear Lake at minus 39 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Maple Creek, which got up to plus 1 degree. The cold spot was not just Saskatchewan's cold spot, but the Canadian cold spot. Key Lake got down to minus 43 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. It's time now to check in once again with Tanya Cherry.
Beef and Forage Report.
Dairy producers are gathering in Winnipeg this week for their annual conference. David Weens, chair of the Dairy Farmers of Manitoba, says it's nice to be back with an in-person event. He says while last year was a struggle for producers trying to find feed with the drought, things turned around this year, and despite wet conditions, producers brought in some surprisingly good crops. He notes that along with the impact of the drought and last year's wet conditions, the industry continues to see some major challenges. He says fertilizer costs have gone up by 44%, fuels have gone up by 32%, and animal feeds have gone up by 8%. And that's today's Beef and Forage Report. It's time now for the AgriView portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, AgriView.
Any hopes of Canada exporting 9.3 million metric tons of canola during 2022-23 have now been dashed for two reasons. One reason is the latest Statistics Canada production report that cut canola production for the current marketing year. The other is the bumper canola crop Australia is now expected to have this year. StatsCan's survey-based production report, issued last Friday, cut canola production from the 19.1 million estimated by the federal agency's modeling and satellite reports down to 18.17 million. Ahead of the latest StatsCan report, Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada projected 2022-23 canola exports at 9.3 million metric tons, jumping 76.5% from the previous year. The potential loss of access to an insecticide used to manage flea beetle populations poses a challenge for canola production in Western Canada in 2023. Syngenta and Adama Canada have recalled insecticide products containing Lambda cyhalothrin under the trade names Matador and Silencer from their distribution channels in Western Canada. It follows a decision by the Pest Management Regulatory Agency that will change the rules for when the active ingredient can be used starting in April of 2023. The changes include canceling approval of Matador and Silencer use on crops grown for animal feed. Syngenta has said Matador will not be available in Western Canada in 2023, while Adama has also recalled its existing Silencer supply, but is yet to make a final decision on whether Silencer will be available to prairie farmers next growing season with an updated label. The Saskatchewan Conservative MP for Cypress Hills Grasslands, Jeremy Patzer, has put forward a private member's bill, C-294, in an effort to amend the Copyright Act to better reflect the reality of modern-day manufacturing. Patzer says the Canada's outdated rules on the topic of equipment interoperability were mentioned in the new NAFTA negotiations and that they were seen as a barrier to innovation for manufacturers. The amendments would bring Canada's rules up to speed with other countries' rules, such as Australia and the U.S., and would mean farmers would have more choices on header options, regardless of combine color, for example. The bill has passed second reading and is now headed to the committee stage for more discussion and cross-examination of the bill's intent and outcomes. British Columbia's ag community has a new representative in the provincial legislature. Premier David Eby announced Pam Alexis, the MLA for Abbotsford Mission, will be the Minister of Agriculture and Food in his cabinet. In total, Eby's cabinet is made up of 23 ministers and 4 ministers of state. Alexis takes over for Lana Popham, who served as ag minister under Premier John Horgan. Popham will remain in Eby's cabinet as the Minister of Tourism, Arts, Culture, and Sport. Mexico has offered to extend a deadline to ban genetically modified corn until 2025 and is working on a proposal to overhaul its plan. Mexico is crafting a proposal to modify and make clearer the presidential decree, which is currently set to ban herbicide glyphosate and GM corn in 2024. The country's GM corn decree has shaken the international agriculture sector and prompted threats of legal action from the U.S. That's Mexico's source of about 17 million metric tons of imported corn. In November, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack said Washington would consider steps under the Canada-U.S.-Mexico Trade Pact. The ban was focused on corn for human consumption, and that GM yellow corn imports for animal feed would still be allowed, pending a permit by a health regulator. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. It's time now to head back out once again to Tanya Cherry. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's cloudy and minus 13 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Using precision agriculture tools was the topic of a producer panel at the Canola Discovery Forum in Saskatoon yesterday. Carl DeConnick-Smith farms in the Darcy area, not far from Rosetown. He's been an early adopter during his 2 decades of farming, with practices such as ultra-early seeding to spot spraying, and now the autonomous DOT platform. He likes the process of integrating new technology.
With this DOT machine and our original old seeder, just finding what they're each good at. So maybe the OmniPower might be better at seeding canola. So I'm hoping to do slightly more canola, less compaction, not a big tank behind there. So it's just finding those niches and thinking through all of those processes where we can make this stuff fit into our industry.
Rob Stone from Davidson says patience is important when working with new technology.
You have to be able to exercise a great degree of patience. both for the mental well-being of the people around you and yourself when you're implementing a new process. Because regardless of what you do, there's going to be a great learning curve, and there's also going to be a significant time of questioning whether you're doing the right thing, whether this the time is worth it in order to accomplish those other things, because you want your curiosity satisfied, but you do question yourself at times.
An informal survey of farmers found growth mindset, curiosity, and financial incentives were important for early adopters. It's time now for the livestock market conditions, and that's a presentation of Heartland Livestock in Yorkton.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 153.97, up 42. April live cattle trading at 158.17, up 55. March feeder cattle trading at 184.87, up 162. April feeder cattle trading at 188.22, that's also up 162. February lean hogs trading at 84.85, down 180. April lean hogs trading at 90.77, down 205. And that's the livestock market conditions. Now it's time for the Heartland Livestock Report from Yorkton.
Good afternoon. This is the Yorkton Heartland Livestock Market Report for the week of December the 7th. Good numbers again, considering the cold weather we had the beginning of the week. 1880 in the short, 350 cows and bulls, a total of 2230 for the day. Cows and bulls selling steady with last week. D1, D2 cows, 73 to 83, sales to 84.50, D3 cows, 63 to 73. Cows are averaging 75.75. Good bulls, 114 to 124, sales to 128. Bulls are averaging 118. On to the pre-sort sale. These good end calves selling strong and active, but these plain and medium type cattle selling under pressure. On the steer side, 420 pound black steers, 325, 500 pounders, 299, 575 pound steers, 290, 650 pound tan steers, 272. My favorite pen, 710 pound black steers, 257. 800-pound red-black exotic steers, 247, and 850-pounders at 237. On the heifer side, 425-pound red-black exotic heifers, 242, 500-pound tan heifers, 238, 575-pounders, 230, 650s at 214, 710-pound heifers, 210, 780s at 208. Had some replacement quality heifers here, 850-pound red-black exotic heifers at 193. That comes out to $1,650. Some big yearling heifers still coming to town here. 1,075-pound heifers at 182. That's $1,960. And, of course, my highlight of the morning, no other than my favorite pen, 710-pound tan steers, top to market at $259. There was 26 steers in that package, $1,838. This Friday, December the 9th, bred cow and bred heifer sale, 350 expected, 4 herd dispersals. 220 from the Zangles at Togo. 60 head from Dave Barron, Morley Meyer Ranch at Yorkton. 60 head from Perry and Joanne Powell Ranch at Killally. Sale starts at 11 o'clock on Friday. This sale will be on DLMS. That's it for this week at Heartland Yorkton. I'm Harvey Exeter. Have a good day.
And it's time now to check in once again with Tanya Cherry. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Canada's food price report predicts the average family of four will be spending an additional $1,065 on food next year, which works out to a 5 to 7% increase. The report is an annual collaboration between four Canadian universities, including the University of Saskatchewan. Associate Professor Stuart Smythe says on-farm and processing costs are rising, but other things are adding to the bill as well.
We use the Consumer Price Index and go back over 40 years with that information and then model it so that we're as confident as we possibly can be that the predictions for the coming 12 months are accurate. So that results in us coming up with a 5 to 7% increase for 2023.
He says it's comparable to last year.
It's pretty much the same as last year. So, you know, the last couple of years have been in that 4 to 6 or 5 to 7 range, although last year we could never have predicted that Russia was going to invade the Ukraine, or that, you know, the price of gas would go from $1 a liter this time up to over $2 last summer. So it resulted in us being not as accurate as we would have liked for this year.
Smythe explains why costs are rising.
I think one of the hidden costs in a lot of this is just the shortage of labor. So I was looking at some of the transportation numbers, and they're saying that a little earlier in the fall, there was 15,000 truck driving vacancies, and they expect that to rise by more than double come spring. So the fact that you've got containers, and then a lot of those will be food containers sitting in ports for an extra day or maybe a day and a half to get that driver, that contributes to the higher price that we end up paying. And that's something that I think a lot of us as consumers just really don't take into consideration.
He says there's likely some food waste because of that.
I mean, if you're transporting some of the fresh fruits and vegetables and it's taking you, you know, maybe 2 or 3 extra days to get them to market, this is what the report talks a little bit about with the shelflation, that consumers are finding that they'll buy something and it's not lasting as long as it would have previously. And so you're right, it's contributing to higher food waste because they simply have no option to consume those products. They're expiring almost within a day or two of entering the home.
Smythe says grocery stores are trying to keep prices under control so they don't lose business.
I think grocery stores are probably spending far more time than they would have ever envisioned in sort of examining price increases and where can they put sales on products that are going to help bring consumers into the stores, because certainly we're seeing that consumers are far more price conscious than they have ever been in the food space, with about a third of consumers now are using coupons or point reward programs, shopping at multiple grocery stores. So grocery stores are realizing just how price-savvy and price-conscious consumers are becoming.
He believes grocery shoppers are starting to realize that they enjoyed Canada's cheap food policy for many years.
I think that's part of it. Yeah, absolutely. When we look sort of globally, the amount of income that Canadians spend on groceries is some of the lowest in the industrial countries. So we have been very fortunate, but it sort of looks like we're going to be playing the catch-up game rather quickly.
And Smythe provides an estimate on what percentage of the average Canadian's income is spent on food.
You know, with the median income being, you know, in that $65,000 to, say, $70,000 range, with a household of four spending $16,000 on groceries, it's certainly getting higher than it, you know, 20 years ago, it was maybe 8 to 10%. And I would say now in a lot of households, it's probably getting closer to 20%.
Stuart Smythe is an associate professor with the University of Saskatchewan. It's time now for the Commodities Update, and that's a presentation of Hackman Feeds.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are trading up in the nearby months this hour. January canola trading at $873.40, up $9.80. March canola trading at $858.80, up $6.40. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $9.07 per bushel. That's up 5 cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $8.42¾, down 6 cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $7.45 per bushel, down 4½ cents. March corn trading at $6.42 per bushel, up 0.75 cents. January soybeans trading at $14.82 per bushel. That's up 10 cents. March oats trading at $3.29¼, down 3½ cents. And that's the commodities update. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will be back right after this. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. Dr. John Campbell, a veterinarian and professor at the Western College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Saskatchewan, has started a new podcast. The target audience is cow-calf producers, and it will cover various health and nutritional issues for beef cattle. This past week, the focus was on the importance of calfhood vaccinations. Addressing the issue is Dr. Nathan Erickson with the Western College of Veterinary Medicine.
One thing that's interesting about calves is that they are born without any antibody, and they really can't produce antibody for a few weeks. That's not to say that their immune system isn't ready to go. It is ready to go. It's just not completely primed yet. So what makes calf a little bit different is they don't have any systemic antibody. It's antibody that would be in the bloodstream, but they do acquire that, and they get that through nursing of colostrum. So I'm sure many of you will have your vets talking to you about colostrum and saying how important it is for the calves to nurse that colostrum within the first few hours of life. And that's because that colostrum is filled with what's called IgG, which is a particular type of antibody. And that can essentially absorb into the bloodstream, gets into the circulation, and that gives that calf at least that type of immunity for the first few months of life. And that can extend out to even 6 months in some of our calves before they lose all of that antibody from their system.
Dr. Erickson says there are variables in how long the maternal antibodies provide protection for the calf.
If you're at a higher starting concentration, then it's going to remain for a longer period of time. And each cow doesn't have necessarily the same concentration of antibody in their colostrum. It just kind of depends on a number of different factors, including age of the dam. So first calf heifers are going to have poor quality colostrum, so presumably their calves may have a shorter duration of immunity. But then if we look at another virus like BVD, it's not uncommon for BVD type 1 or type 2 for the concentrations there to last out 6 even to 8 months, where they still have concentrations circulating that could potentially be protective in the bloodstream.
When it comes to vaccinations, the strength of the maternal immunity can be an issue.
Well, the one thing I always want to preface whenever I'm talking with my producers that I work with about this is that we want to have maternal antibody. We need that to be the highest that we can get it to be. So we really desire that to be high. That being said, there is a negative consequence of it. And it's really a negative consequence because we are trying to vaccinate the cattle. It's not a negative consequence because of anything naturally in the animal. It's because of a human intervention that we're trying to do. So we're trying to get these calves vaccinated and getting them to have an immune response. Problem is when we have these high concentrations of maternal antibody, they're there, they're doing their job, and we want them to do their job. But unfortunately, their job is to neutralize viruses or bacteria. And when we're administering vaccines, they're going to interfere with the vaccines. Many of our vaccines are modified live virus vaccines, so they have virus in it that we need it to replicate in order to get a good immune response. But the maternal antibody is going to recognize that as a foreign invader and is potentially going to partially, if not fully, neutralize it, so we don't get a good response to the vaccine. There's a little bit of variability in terms of, you know, different parts of the immune system. We definitely don't get a good antibody response, but there is other parts of the immune system that may still respond. But we don't expect in calves that have high maternal antibody to get a very good protective response. Now, luckily, the maternal antibody is still there to protect the calves, but we're not quite getting the protective response that we may expect. So it becomes a question of priming rather than a question of eliciting a protective response at that point.
Dr. Nathan Erickson is with the Western College of Veterinary Medicine in Saskatoon. He was the guest on a new podcast produced by Dr. John Campbell. The two veterinarians cover a wide range of topics on the podcast, such as intranasal versus injectable vaccines, intranasal vaccines currently available in Canada, and the importance of working with your veterinarian to design a vaccination program. The podcast is called the Beef Cattle Health and Nutrition Podcast, and it can be found on any of the major podcast platforms. It's coming up on 1 o'clock. That means it's time for the GX94 Precision Weather Forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today, a mix of sun and cloud, winds east-southeast at 10 to 20, and a high of minus 12. For tonight, a few clouds, winds southeast at 15 to 25, a low of minus 16, then rising. For tomorrow, partly sunny, winds south-southeast at 15 to 25, a high of minus 9. For Saturday, a mix of sun and cloud, Winds west-southwest at 10 to 20, a high of minus 8. For Sunday, cloudy, a high of minus 7, and Monday, a 40% chance of flurries, a high of minus 5. In the Paw, it's minus 24 degrees. Swan River is at minus 18. Dauphin and Shoal Lake Russell, minus 12. Brandon and Roblin, minus 13. Regina is at minus 14 degrees. Saskatoon, Broadview, Mooseman, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 11. Hudson Bay, minus 20. Indian Head, minus 12. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, an east wind at 15 kilometers an hour. 76% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 13 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 21 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.